Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with Josh Rogan, who writes the daily web column The Cable at Foreign Policy. Last week, in a roundtable discussion with President Bill Clinton, Josh Rogan got the former president to speak on the record about his efforts at Middle East peace that came close to solving the Israeli-Palestinian agony and why they failed. In short, Bill Clinton blamed Netanyahu. And we will discuss these revelations with Josh Rogan, who has an article at Foreign Policy, Bill Clinton, Netanyahu Killed the Peace Process. Then Doug Henwood joins us. He is the editor of The Left Business Observer and the author of Wall Street, How It Works and Who For. We will discuss whether the people inside the tall towers on Wall Street are being shamed by the protesters outside. Then we'll look into why the Antichrist matters in politics, the title of an op-ed in Monday's New York Times. As it happened later Monday night at a fundraiser in Los Angeles, a heckler accused President Obama of being the Antichrist. The author of the article, Matthew Sutton, professor of history at Washington State University, joins us. He is completing a new book, American Evangelicals and the Politics of Apocalypse. Joining us now is Josh Rogan, who's a writer for Foreign Policy, where he has written the daily web column The Cable since 2009. Previously, he's covered defense and foreign policy for Congressional Quarterly and has also served as a national security reporter for Federal Computer Week magazine and Japan's leading newspaper, the Asahi Shimbun. He has worked at the House International Relations Committee and the Brookings Institution. He has a recent article in Foreign Policy titled Bill Clinton, Netanyahu Killed the Peace Process. Welcome to Background Briefing, Josh Rogan.
Glad to be with you.
And clearly your article created a storm when it came out, in as much as the Sunday talk shows talked about it. And, of course, it coincided with the arrival of the world leaders to the UN, including, of course, Netanyahu and the Palestinian leader, who declared statehood, as was expected. But it still amazes me that a figure like Bill Clinton, who was clearly trying to bring about a deal at the last minute of his presidency, I recall it really was down to the last minute, has so much to say about it. Do you feel that this is going to be built upon in terms of the historical record?
Well, I hope that all my articles contribute significantly to the historical record, but there's no doubt that the timing of Bill Clinton's remarks was extremely sensitive for the Obama administration. Only blocks away, while his wife, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, was meeting with Netanyahu, Clinton was giving a small briefing to a group of bloggers, including myself, as part of his Clinton Global initiative. And he had no plans to make huge news about the Israeli-Palestinian peace process, but I simply asked him directly for his opinion on what went wrong between 2000, when he came so close to achieving a peace deal, and today, when we seem so far away. And he very clearly stated that he placed the bulk of the blame on the Netanyahu administration and the shifting demographics in Israel, which he described as being more influenced by Russian settlers and Russian immigrants, who he described as being less amenable to peace. And both of those positions are hugely controversial for a number of obvious reasons, but the bottom line here is that this reveals both Clinton's long-standing frustration with Netanyahu personally in terms of his role in the peace process over many years, and the basic desire of any former president to cast his legacy in the most favorable light and sort of justify why his diplomacy at the time didn't lead to a more positive result now.
Well, Josh Rogan, I've talked to a number of people who served in the Clinton administration in those portfolios to do with Middle East peace. And one of the participants in the first meeting in the White House between President Clinton and Netanyahu said that after the meeting, Clinton was furious, and he muttered, "Who is the effing superpower around here?" So is this something about Netanyahu that he's shall we say, prickly?
That's a very famous story about one of Clinton's earlier interactions with Netanyahu, and it sort of feeds into a meme that many people in Washington, including many people high up in the Obama administration, secretly believe but never utter in public, which is that the U.S. Administrations, both in the past and now, are hamstrung by their political necessity to appear to be super close to the Israeli government when, in fact, they believe that the best way to achieve a meaningful breakthrough in the peace process is to pressure the Netanyahu government. And the feeling amongst many in Washington, including many in the Obama administration, that the Netanyahu government punches above its weight by using its friends and allies, both in Congress and in the Washington political, foreign policy, and lobbying communities, to exert a disproportionate amount of pressure on the Obama administration not to do that very thing, which is to pressure Israel to make more concessions than they're ready to make. So, you know, Bill Clinton is, has a penchant for impolitic honesty, and I think that, plus the remarks he made to me last week, were shining examples of that.
So let's go further into the remarks that he made to you, and former President Bill Clinton.
Sure.
Again, I'm speaking with Josh Rogan, the writer for Foreign Policy, where he's written the daily web column, The Cable, since 2008. And he met with Bill Clinton at a roundtable of bloggers on the sidelines of the Clinton Global Initiative, just as the world leaders were gathering in New York last week for the UN meetings, largely about Palestinian statehood. So he apparently said to you, the two great tragedies in modern Middle Eastern politics, which makes you wonder if God wants Middle East peace or not, were Yitzhak Rabin's assassination and Ariel Sharon's stroke. Just fill us in on that context there.
Sure. So basically what he's saying here is that the only way for a meaningful breakthrough in the peace process to happen is for the Israeli leader to take a big political risk and to urge the Israeli public and the Israeli political structure to move towards concessions that are deeply unpopular amongst the majority of Israelis. And, of course, that's exactly what Yitzhak Rabin and then Ariel Sharon did. Actually, Clinton actually went further in his remarks, and I couldn't put them all into the article for space reasons, but, you know, he said that, you know, much like the way that Nixon was the only man who could open up China, Sharon was the only man who could, you know, have the credibility and strength, because he had been a Likud member and a conservative for so long, to speak some hard truths to the Israeli public about sacrifices they were going to have to make, and about the realization, in Sharon's view, that the occupation of the West Bank and Gaza was simply untenable and unsustainable. And again, it's a suspicion, but not a fact, that that the Netanyahu government simply doesn't believe it has the political space to make these kinds of hard decisions, and that they're too vulnerable to take these kinds of risks, and Netanyahu doesn't want to lose his coalition. But B, also that maybe Netanyahu ultimately doesn't want to go ahead and be the guy who presides over huge concessions, and maybe he believes that the status quo is in Israel's favor for the time being, and that a lack of concessions is more in Israel's interest. So these are not things that Netanyahu says publicly, but this is what, again, Bill Clinton apparently and some in the Obama administration privately believe is Netanyahu's M.O.
Well, to some extent, in the last couple of days, Josh Rogan, that M.O. has been borne out, hasn't it? In the U.N. speech, Netanyahu appealed to his Palestinian counterpart that he wanted peace. Sit down and talk with me. And we know that the Palestinians are refusing to talk because they want a settlement freeze before they talk. And then, of course, just yesterday it was announced that I think 1,200 new settlements are going to be built in East Jerusalem. And Netanyahu said, you know, more or less said, yes, you're damn right they're going to be built.
Sure. So, you know, and there's two sides to every story. And in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, there's two sides to every side. So it's Netanyahu is correct technically that he's offered talks without preconditions, and the Palestinians are requiring the precondition of a settlement freeze. But, you know, in terms of the timing of today's announcement, what the Israeli officials told me today, who I spoke with, is that they said there's simply never going to be any good time to announce new settlements, and that the Israeli administration has been clear that settlements will continue. So people shouldn't be all that surprised that the settlements are actually going to continue. You know, the bottom line here is that, Netanyahu's position has not changed. The Palestinians' position has not changed. The space between them is exactly where it was before this UN diplomatic crisis took place last week, and that's exactly where it's likely to stay. So there's plenty of blame to go around. I definitely wouldn't put the failure personally as an object valid squarely on the Netanyahu administration by any means, but it is fair to say that you know, whatever concessions the Obama administration has asked them privately to make, they've refused. And I guess you could say the same thing about the Obama administration's request for the Palestinians to make concessions as well.
So back to your conversation with former President Bill Clinton, where he was unusually frank about why the peace deal that he tried to put together at the last minute fell apart. Clinton still seems to be mystified by Yasser Arafat's rejection.
Yeah, he actually said, you know, he said that Arafat had never lied to him, and that he trusted the man and believed he was negotiating in good faith up until the very last minute. And then at that very last minute, when Arafat stepped away from the table, despite receiving historic concessions from the Ehud Barak administration, to this day, Clinton has no idea what happened, and he can't even speculate as to why Arafat was ultimately unable to sign on the dotted line. But he used this anecdote to make another point against Netanyahu, which is simply that according to Clinton, the Palestinians are still offering the basic framework of that 2000 deal, which includes making East Jerusalem the capital of a Palestinian state and some other things that the Netanyahu government has since moved away from. And this is the core of Clinton's argument, that Netanyahu moved the goalposts from where they were in 2000 farther away to make the deal that was ripe for signing in 2000 untenable to the Israeli government today, and that the Palestinians have actually moved closer to the deal. So again, that's a controversial statement in and of itself, but that's what he was saying. That's why he was tying the Arafat incident to what happened this week. And the things that Bill Clinton said about different sectors of Israeli society having different attitudes toward peace, I mean, that's what really gets under the Israeli skin, because especially for them to think of their different racial and minority and ethnic groups within their country as being more or less willing to make peace, they see that as extremely offensive. But that's what Bill Clinton believes in. He actually said that to me a year ago as well. So there's no doubt in his mind that the settler community and the Russian immigrant community are standing as obstacles to a negotiated solution.
So, Josh Rogan, what is the subtext of that remark? Is he saying that these Russians are racist against the Arabs, or are they, because they came from a Soviet socialist country, arguably the communists are the ones that destroyed socialism, but nevertheless, emigres from former Soviet bloc countries tend to be extremely right-wing?
No, yeah, I mean, he's not saying they're racist. He's saying that because they haven't lived in Israel that long, they're not invested in the long-standing negotiations and interactions that the Israelis and the Palestinians have engaged in over the past couple of decades that have led us to this point. That's why they're seeking, according to Clinton, to start from scratch. He's simply saying that they don't have relationships with the Palestinians, so they're not sensitive to the Palestinians' concerns. And he told a story, again, which wasn't in the article, but that I'll share with you now, which was an interaction that he had with Natan Sharansky, a famous Russian dissident who was in prison for many years and then rose to lead an Israeli political party, in which Sharansky says to him, "I came from the largest country in the world, Russia, and now I'm in the smallest country in the world, Israel, and you want me to cut it in half? No way." To which Clinton responded, "Well, small as Israel is, it's much bigger than your jail cell, and therefore you should be appreciative." And that's sort of where he thinks the Russian immigrant community is coming from and where he's coming from. And that was built into, again, from his experience in Camp David. And, I don't really have a view on that personally, but it is something that just drives the Israeli government crazy when they hear people say that.
Well, Josh Rogan, I seem to recall that not long after the peace talks collapsed at the very end of the Clinton administration, maybe it was at the time, that Arafat said to Clinton in a kind of unctuous way, trying to ingratiate himself, you know, that you will be remembered as a great man, Mr. President Clinton, and to which Clinton apparently said, "No, I'm not going to be remembered as a great man. I'm going to be remembered as a failure," and that these peace talks having collapsed will result in Barak being booted out and Netanyahu being elected. I think didn't Clinton know at the time that you know he was lame duck and out of there, but he knew that Ehud Barak was going to go down as well.
Yeah, well, I'm not familiar with that particular remark, but what Clinton said about the fallout from his failed diplomatic effort at Camp David in 2000 was very specific. He said that it led directly to the Second Intifada, which caused well-documented years of violence and instability, and then that the Bush administration didn't really enthusiastically engaged the peace process until it was too late in their administration to do anything about it, and that this period of malaise between 2000 and, let's say, 2009, you know, changed so many of the facts on the ground on both sides, for better and for worse, that it sort of made his original build-up of diplomacy sort of dead on arrival when it came time for the Obama administration to re-engage. So he didn't necessarily say he considered himself a success or a failure, but he was definitely downtrodden about what had been the result of his failed effort. And, you know, I'm sure that he would acknowledge at least some of the blame for that.
So, Josh Rogan, but Bill Clinton did go on to talk to you about the Saudi peace initiative put forth in 2002, right?
Yeah, I mean, this was he said there were two main things that the Israeli government had always wanted. One was a Palestinian government that was competent of ruling and enforcing agreements, and the second was a comprehensive peace offering from its neighboring Arab states. And he said that now that the Israeli government has achieved those two objectives, they don't seem to be so interested in them anymore. Now, the Saudi peace initiative of 2002 is not necessarily what everyone would call, you know, a satisfaction of the Israeli demand for a comprehensive and fair peace, but it was at least a starting point. And Bill Clinton's argument is that the Israeli government never embraced that as a starting point for negotiations with countries like Saudi Arabia and just dismissed it offhand. And that's a whole other debate for a whole other show. But his point is there is not to necessarily praise the Arab Peace Initiative, but to point out that, again, that the Netanyahu government is not at the same place where the Barak or the Olmert or the Sharon governments were. And that is, according to Clinton, why the peace process has become so much more difficult in 2011.
So, Josh Rogan, has there been any kind of walking back, as they say, from his wife over at the State Department, Hillary?
Well, I don't mind telling you that the Israeli government did ask the State Department to distance itself from Bill Clinton's remarks. And then privately, the State Department said to the Israeli government that Bill Clinton's a private citizen, and the two Clintons are not, you know, the same person, and that they wouldn't be necessarily doing that. So there was a lot of anger and frustration within the Netanyahu staff and within the Netanyahu office about Clinton's remarks. There was some anger and frustration within Bill Clinton's office at me for publishing them, but that wasn't, you know, there was nothing I could do about that. He said it, and I published it, and that was a simple decision for me. And at the State Department, they just sort of threw up their hands, and you know, they know that they can't control Bill Clinton, much less Netanyahu. So there's really nothing they could do about it.
And how's this playing in Israel? Because Israel, in many ways, has a more vigorous press than we do. They certainly have a more polarized press than we do.
People are upset at Bill Clinton in Israel for these remarks, much as they were last year when he made similar remarks about the Russian immigrant community, again at the TGI Bloggers Roundtable, again to me, which I published. There's a lot of bad blood now between some parts of the Likud party and Bill Clinton. It doesn't seem like Bill Clinton is bothered by that particularly. And, you know, those in Israel, as just like those in Washington who are inclined to agree with Bill Clinton's take on the Netanyahu administration, are inclined to praise him. And those who are inclined to disagree are inclined to criticize him. You know, I don't think his remarks changed anybody's mind one way or the other. If you thought Netanyahu was to blame for the failure of the peace process, you probably still think so. And if you thought that the Palestinians were to blame, then you probably think that Bill Clinton was way off the mark.
Well, I'm just trying to pass out the extent to which his remarks about the changing political nature of the country because of the Russian emigres versus the actual content and the historical record that he gave you in that talk that you had with him last week.
Yeah, and Netanyahu has been very clear that he disputes both of those things. He actually told Fox News, he said, I did move the goalposts closer to peace, you know, which is his way of sort of dinging Bill Clinton's analysis. The Russian immigrant community has been very critical of these remarks. They take very offense. They think it's simply racist to box them in as being one opinion or another based on their ethnicity. And, you know, but Bill Clinton doesn't seem to be shying away from that, since now this is the second year in a row where he's made those assertions.
So listeners can get this article by just going to foreignpolicy.com, is that right? How do they get it?
So my blog is called The Cable. You can Google The Cable, or you can go to thecable.foreignpolicy.com, or you can simply Google the Bill Clinton, Netanyahu killed the peace process, and you should get a bunch of results, including some interesting videos of Netanyahu's response during his trip to Washington and New York.
I thank you for joining us here today, Josh Rogan.
It's been a pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Josh Rogan, who's a writer for Foreign Policy, where he's written the daily web column The Cable since 2009. Previously, he's covered defense and foreign policy for Congressional Quarterly and has also served as a national security reporter for Federal Computer Week magazine and Japan's leading daily newspaper, the Asahi Shimbun. He has worked at the House International Relations Committee and the Brookings Institution, and his recent article in Foreign Policy is titled Bill Clinton, Netanyahu Killed the Peace Process. We're going to take a brief station break. We'll be back in a moment.